Are you sticking by your decision to hold any vote on that deal until after the Senate passes a much larger infrastructure package through reconciliation?
Yes.
It's time for mandates because it's the only way to protect our people.
We cannot now go back to where we were, and I am telling you, as I sit here, I have told you the facts on COVID from day one.
Freedom is back in style. Welcome to the revolution.
Yeah, we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song.
Sean Hannity. The new Sean Hannity Show. More behind-the-scenes information on breaking news and more bold, inspired solutions for America.
All right, thanks, Scott Shannon, and thanks to all of you for being with us. Write down our toll-free number. It's 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. All right, so you got these hearings going on in Washington. I'll be honest, it's sort of like this is the Democratic version of impeachment number three. Because, what have I been saying? Democrats, I would have liked a commission on January 6th. I also would like a commission on all of the rioting that took place last summer. Unlike Democrats, they ignored the rioting, the looting, the arson, the attacks on police. You know, every night, what were we seeing what were we showing you on my TV show? Bricks, rocks, bottles, Molotov cocktails being hurled at police officers. We showed you cities ablaze. We showed you police precincts ablaze. We showed you looting in, you know, broad daylight and at nighttime. Didn't seem to matter. And, you know, it's only when things become politically expedient for Democrats do they seem to show any concern or care. Now, also, unlike them, we are intellectually honest and consistent and condemned everything that happened on January 6th at the Capitol. That cannot happen in this great country. I said it then, I'll say it again now. We cannot in this country have our institutions attacked. These are elected officials. They must be protected. And if you enter a Capitol or a government building illegally, you ought to be arrested. And that's happened. You know, one of the strangest outcomes in all of this is that the Democrats, they have no interest. They wouldn't even acknowledge the rioting that was last summer. That was all over the place. They didn't even want to, barely wanted to talk about it. You know, and then they put, so Republicans try to cooperate. They put Congressman Jim Jordan, Congressman Banks on the committee, and Nancy Pelosi throws them off the committee and replaces, Jordan and Banks with Liz Cheney, she's already come to her conclusion. You know, Adam Kinzinger, she picks the people that will come to the predetermined conclusion that they want at the end of the day. And, you know, Liz Cheney, I think she's not politically stupid. I think she knows probably her days in Congress are numbered. And frankly, at this point, she would like to. I think part of her goal is to purge the Republican Party of Donald Trump and the America First, Make America Great Again agenda. It's amazing how the Cheneys and so many others, Mitt Romney's another one, that they forget. You know, do you remember, Liz Cheney, that they were calling your father a war criminal? Did you forget the allegations about your father and Halliburton and everything in between, accusing your father of being guilty of torture and murder and you know, Bush and Cheney lied and people died? And, you know, it's amazing. It's like Mitt Romney, a misogynist, a racist, this. Now we're gonna identify with that group of people. It's kind of like invasion of the body snatchers or the Stockholm syndrome, but that's neither here nor there. Now there's a lot of things that I can tell you ahead of time that are not going to come out, that should come out as a result of these hearings. But the first question is where are the hearings And when will the hearings be that examine what happened in city after city after city last summer? That literally thousands of people were injured. 25 people died. Arson took place. Police precincts were burned to the ground. Stores were looted. Bricks, rocks, bottles, frozen water bottles, Molotov cocktails hurt the police officers. You know, well over 2,000 officers injured in the course of the rioting that took place last summer. That can't happen either. Why won't Democrats have a commission on that? The Democrats that were silent as it was unfolding. The Joe Biden that never mentioned it during the Democratic National Convention. You know, the Kamala Harris that actually promoted a bail fund for people in Minneapolis that were involved in this activity to get them out of jail sooner so that they can get back into the action. You know, it's absolute hypocrisy. You know, for example, there were 71 people shot in the city of Chicago last weekend. I ask this question often. I'll ask it again. Does anybody listening to my voice now, do you know the name of one single person shot or shot and murdered this weekend in Chicago, which is now a typical weekend in Chicago, just like a typical weekend in New York, just like a typical weekend in many California cities? You know, Barbara Boxer got assaulted, former senator of California, out in the San Francisco area. You know, because they're not arresting people that steal $1,000 worth of stuff. Oh, what's happening? People are going in at, with garbage bags. They're filling them up with just less than $1,000 worth of stuff, and they're walking out with it. Well, those stores aren't going to be able to stay open. So the hypocrisy just reeks to high heaven. And really all this is in so many ways is, you know, selective moral outrage once again. Now, what happened to George Floyd? I was one of those people that said, look, I can speak as a martial artist. The most vulnerable part of the human anatomy is one's neck. When the guy's in handcuffs, there's no need to keep your knee on anybody's neck for 9 minutes. As a matter of fact, it's pretty much an automatic death sentence. And I'm speaking as a martial artist that is trained in self-defense at a pretty high level. And that would be a targeted strike that if I were to strike the bottom part of your jaw with the target of hitting that and the carotid artery, just a fraction of a second of the blood cut to your brain by one of the carotid arteries, one on each side, you would likely, knowing my art as a student, you would likely go right down, your knees would buckle, and you would be on the ground. And if you tried to stand up too quickly, guess what? You probably wouldn't make it. You probably would fall down again. And I know because I train and I've seen it. Put you in a rear naked choke, I'll choke you out in 12 seconds. That's why it's so sudden. That's why it can't happen. But we only hear about what happened with George Floyd. It can't happen again. It's not the 99% of good cops. It's the 1% of people that have no business being a police officer. I've offered alternatives, more training, non-lethal alternatives. I talked about the burner gun. If you haven't seen it, it's BYRNA. I bought many of them. I give them away as gifts now. So many of my friends want them. Anyway, so I want to be very, very clear here. We are consistent. We've been consistent. We'll stay consistent. Riots of any kind, anywhere, in any city, or our nation's capital, it can't happen. And the only way to prevent it, it's not by defunding and dismantling the police or reimagining the police and sending in shrinks instead of police officers. Because a lot happened that day. If you look at the Major Cities Chiefs Association, it's called the MCCA. You know, that's 69 of the largest police forces around the country. You know, all the data just from May to July 31st, and it went well beyond that, there were over 8,700 total protests nationwide, an average of over 100 per city. 574 of those 8,700 protests were officially declared riots with violence. Now, there were over a couple of thousand cops injured. We saw it firsthand, almost on a nightly basis. 72% of police agencies nationwide reported that officers were injured. You know, we had 624 separate incidents of arson. 97 police cars were burned. 2,385 looting incidents. And that's only half the summer. We had 3,692 protests involving illegal acts of civil disobedience. And don't forget the Chaz Chop Autonomous Spaghetti Potluck Dinner Summer of Love Zone and my interview with Horace Lorenzo Anderson Sr., whose son, Horace Lorenzo Anderson Jr., was murdered in the Summer of Love Zone. And I was shocked to find out that I was the first person to call this family. And I've stayed in touch with this man. Nobody recovers from that kind of thing in life, losing a, 21-year-old kid. You know, you have police officers. Okay, I'm watching the hearings today, and they're describing what happened in the Capitol. Now we got to ask some tough questions that I don't think this committee has any interest in getting to the answer of. And that is why, with all of the separate requests for police, why was the police chief denied on six separate occasions his requests for police assistance? Why? Who is in charge? Now, this is a good question that nobody will ask probably in their report either. Who's in charge? We knew the day before that they had massive crowds that were going to be at that rally. And yet, why didn't anybody think to maybe prepare the Capitol, because they knew that there was going to be a march on the Capitol and the crowd was going to be massive and tensions were likely going to be high? This was a predictable event. And then we've heard from Mark Meadows at different points that even Donald Trump and his administration had asked the National Guard to be called up, to be on the ready. And as before this happens, you have the police chief who ended up resigning over this. I don't know why. He seemed like he was one of the most responsible people involved in this thing. He ended up resigning over this. For what reason, I'm not exactly sure. That's a question I would like to have answered at some point in this equation. But why did they keep denying that when they would call up? Because if you look at Stephen Sund is his name, former Capitol Police Chief, and he said that he made numerous requests before and during this, that the people unlawfully racing into the Capitol the way they did, you know, that he made six separate requests. Six separate times he was denied his request. Now, the House Sergeant at Arms, under the direction of Speaker Pelosi and other presiding officers, the Sergeant of Arms plays an integral role in maintaining order and decorum in the House chamber. And the Sergeant at Arms, also since gone as Chief Law Enforcement Officer in the Senate, is charged with maintaining security in the Capitol and Senate buildings, as well as the protection of members themselves. That would seem to me, the question is, why didn't they act and prepare for this incident? Because they should have. And with all of that said, I still hold people responsible for their conduct and their activity and law breaking, whatever form or manifestation it is. You know, this is not a hard thing for people to wrap their arms around here. So you got angry Democrats that don't want to focus in on Joe Biden's failures at the border with energy, the high cost of everything going through the roof, a gallon of gasoline, $1.25 higher. Everything you buy, every good you purchase, every service that's provided you is costing you more. They don't want to talk about the cyber hacking Joe's allowing Russia to get away with, or the reunification, geographical ambitions of China. The money he's pressuring South Korea to give to Iran, the inflation that is out of control, etc. You know, they don't want to focus on any of this. So I guess this is what their main focus is. But we're only going to do things that we benefit from politically. We'll ignore the hundreds of riots. where many died and thousands were injured. And I'm saying that, no, we should get to the bottom of all of it. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. We'll get to your calls today. The great one, Mark Levin, checks in today. This is where everybody needs to understand something here. It's lives only matter. You know, we get all the statistics every week, and lives only matter to Democrats and the mob and the media when they can be politicized. I think every life matters. That's why we scroll the names of the people you've never heard of who've been shot and killed or shot over a weekend. It's the same quid pro quos. Only matter if they can say Donald Trump with a hearsay non-whistleblower whistleblower. Then it matters. But it doesn't matter when the quid pro quo is Joe and the billion and zero experience Hunter being investigated. Fire the prosecutor. You know, then it doesn't matter. Russia matters if it's Trump, but it doesn't matter if it's Hillary Clinton's dirty Russian disinformation dossier. It doesn't matter if it's Hunter getting $3.5 million from a Russian oligarch, former first lady of Moscow. You know, all, let's see, violence and rioting only matters if it's not a democratic liberal city every weekend. But we're really going to focus on January 6th when all of it is wrong. But why is it selective outrage? That's an easy answer.
Hear what everyone really thinks in D.C. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. Just think through this for a second here. If you believe, like, I make no bones about it. I am pro-life. And I believe in natural rights. I believe that rights come from God. The words endowed by the thing, oh, you know, the thing, God, the creator of everything. Yeah, those words actually mean something, and that rights are God-given. Rights don't come from the government, elected officials. We have natural rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are natural God-given rights. You believe that, then you'd say, yeah, every life matters. I was as outraged as everyone else. We all saw the 9-minute video of George Floyd. That can't happen. The question I have is, going back to when Biden was vice president and Obama's president, and it's every weekend in Chicago, and all of these people are being slaughtered, and it's just a matter of how many were shot on that given weekend and how many were shot and killed on that given weekend, and they barely ever mentioned it. Why do we only hear about cases that it seems like people can exploit politically? You know, for example, if you really believe Russian interference is a big deal and that you suspected that Trump was involved in some type of collusion with Russia in 2016, that you spent 3 years of your life lying about it and spreading conspiracies about it because it was all debunked. But then you find out that Hillary Clinton actually paid for a dirty Russian misinformation dossier. Why aren't you applying the same standards to her? Or if you find out, imagine if it was, let's say it's one of Donald Trump's kids that lies on a gun application. Let's say it's one of Donald Trump's kids that throws a gun in a dumpster. Let's say it's one of Donald Trump's kids that's a crack addict. Let's say it's one of Donald Trump's kids that's making millions of dollars from Ukraine when his father is in charge of Ukrainian policy, and that daddy in off, you know, brags about withholding $1 billion taxpayer dollars to get a prosecutor fired because the prosecutor's investigating his son, who admits he had no experience whatsoever in the energy sector or with Ukraine. You know, why, if you care about a quid and a pro and a quo, you got one right there. You got Joe bragging about it on tape, and you got Hunter saying on Good Morning America, nope, I have no experience. Well, why do you think you got the millions? I don't know. Could it be because of your father? Probably. Probably. That's his answer. Imagine if it was a Trump kid. You know, so it's like when I scroll these names, which I've done on television, you know, from 2009 on, and these names you never hear of, all these people shot and shot and killed, and you never hear of these names. Why isn't there more outrage? Why is there only one case that people focus on? And then the only thing I can conclude is they only focus on the cases that they can politicize. You know, the same thing. Yeah, George Floyd can't happen again, but we can't have every weekend in Chicago where, you know, it's either 30, 40, 50, 60, or like last weekend, 70 some odd people shot, and I think it was 14 dead. We can't have that every weekend either if all lives matter, if black lives matter. Many are minorities in a lot of these city cases. If we care about their lives, and I do, that's why I scroll their names. People don't, you never heard of these names before. There are thousands of them, and it's every city, and it's all across the country. It's breathtaking hypocrisy. You know, if you care about any of these issues, you would apply the standards equally, but we don't, which means politics is in play, which means that this whole commission is a farce. You know, I throwing Jim Jordan and Jim Banks off the committee, it says everything that you need to know. They don't want a bipartisan investigation. Then you bring in the two Republicans that hate Donald Trump the most and fit perfectly into the Democrats' predetermined narrative and outcome. They can write their final report today, and we already know what it is. But they're not going to investigate a lot of aspects of this that should be investigated. And if we're going to investigate all of that, then I would like, you know, of the 5,074 protests last summer that were officially declared riots with violence by the police association. Why are we doing an investigation into that? Thousands injured, you know, billions in dollars in property damage, police precincts burned to the ground, businesses burned to the ground, looting galore. And then we could also maybe investigate why all of these prosecutors have decided they're not going to prosecute. Oh, we're only going to prosecute the people involved. And what happened on January 6th? Why don't we do this? Where is equal application of our laws? Why is there always selective moral outrage? You know, it's like Eric Swalwell. You know, here's a guy. He's on the Intel committee, has this relationship with a Chinese spy, Fang Fang, the U.S. intelligence community. They now have in their possession a classified report, including the intricate and intimate details of the nature of the relationship between Eric Swalwell and this Chinese spy known as Fang Fang. And they won't release it. They're being protected. Joe Biden's Justice Department now, oh, they're going after the new Georgia law, which is far more accessible than Joe's home state of Delaware. But why wouldn't they go after Delaware first? Because now we've weaponized the Justice Department. Why are they not going after all the governors that had executive actions that put people with COVID into nursing homes that resulted in thousands and tens of thousands of deaths in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, in Michigan? Because it's politics. We've criminalized political differences at the highest level now in this country. That is extraordinarily dangerous to the future of this great republic. you know, Mark Levin's on at the top of the hour, and, you know, what did he say a long time ago? It's a post-constitutional America. If you don't have enough examples here where one set of standards are applied to one group of people and a whole different set of standards applied to conservatives and Republicans, you go to jail. All right, what, for example, Michael Horowitz makes referrals in his Inspector General report about people that lied to Congress and lied under oath. Well, isn't that the reason that they sent, let's see, 29 guys in tactical gear and frogmen with guns drawn in a pre-dawn raid with tipped-off CNN fake news cameras to arrest Roger Stone, and they wanted to put him away for the rest of his life? Well, why didn't that happen to the people that were referred in the Inspector General report for doing the exact same thing? I mean, it's sad when I have to say this. By the way, even Britt Hume said that, yeah, I mean, listen, you can't deny it anymore. It's just a fact. Joe is a cognitive mess.
Be a reconciliation.
What must be what?
Immigration. A pathway for citizenship.
There needs to be a pathway for citizenship.
I want to thank you all for being here. Second, by the way, where's Mom? Mom, is she here? Oh, she's watching. Okay, I thought you looked. I said, Mom is out there. I was going to ask her to stand up. But, Mom, you can't stand up and if you're home.
Mr. President, Veterans Affairs is going to have a mandate.
You are such a pain in the neck, but I'm going to answer your question because you've known each other for so long. It has nothing to do with Iraq. The answer, no.
Britt Hume said these are signs of senility. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to play one. But it's obvious when I play Joe in 2012 versus Joe in 2016 versus Joe in 2020 that, you know, if you ever had a fastball, it's long gone. It was snapping in that case at, I believe it was Norah O'Donnell of NBC, or no, I'm sorry, Kelly O'Donnell of NBC. She actually, you're a pain in the neck. I take that as a compliment. That was a good reply. Touche. Good for her. Anyway, you know, that's also part of being cranky, right? Does one event a day? It's a little scary. Then the people, you know, imagine if Donald Trump's White House tried to hide the number of breakthrough COVID cases among White House staff. Why won't they give that number out? And by the way, America's optimism has dropped 20 points since Biden has taken office. And it's not Biden the uniter, it's Biden the divider. Starting with, oh, let's pack the courts. Let's do an investigation. Let's get rid of the legislative filibuster. Let's talk about D.C. statehood and Puerto Rico statehood. You know, and on every single issue, he has capitulated. Let's give Russia a summit and the Nord Stream 2 waiver exemption while we're firing Americans from building our pipeline. Why would anyone do that? You know, no discussion, no debate, nothing. Iran starts enriching more uranium and he pressures South Korea to give them $7 billion more dollars. The Chinese are showing their geographical ambitions and they're out there and telling Americans whether our military can land inside of Taiwan, our ally, and threatening our military bases. That's going on too. Joe's not doing a thing. You know, all of it. Look at the borders. Look at energy prices. Look at, you know, now planes are having a hard time getting enough jet fuel. I mean, it's a real problem. In 6 months, we gave up energy independence, which took us 75 years to achieve. And even Manchin is warning that the infrastructure bill is dying. Prices for young cattle soaring, signaling expensive beef in the future. You know, feds now are meeting, but the feds are never going to tell you the truth. All they want to do is keep interest rates low and act like everything's okay, and it's not. American Airlines warning about the jet fuel shortages around the U.S., asking pilots to conserve. What does that mean, conserve? What, I'm going to push it to the limit? And I'll try to not stop to refuel, and I'll try and make it to the destination, and good luck if I make it. What the hell does that even mean? You know, None of this is good. Lumber prices, food prices, gasoline prices, the prices of anything you buy in any store is going through the roof. And it's pretty unbelievable. And then, of course, open borders. You know, Biden is now trying to create the appearance, according to CNN, that he's beginning to reverse course on the border. No, he's not, because they're still processing everybody. They're not testing him for COVID either. And the few people that are offered the vaccine say, no, thanks. And then they still give him free transportation to whatever state I guess they want to go to. You know, the FBI director won't tell Congress how many terrorists and gang members have been apprehended at the border. I'd like to know why. Why? Why would you withhold that information from the American people? You know, they're trying to stick this amnesty bill inside this reconciliation New Green Deal bill that they're going to ram down our throats because they get one shot at reconciliation and then they only need 50 votes and they're going to try and include amnesty for 8 to 11 million people minimum. Now, with all the hatred of Walmart, I did notice they pledged $1 billion to send their employees to college. Did anyone want to say anything good about Walmart and Costco and Target and places like that? Because I love those stores. I think they're phenomenal. How's it going at the Olympics? Not too well. We've been telling you about the ratings disaster. Olympian Lolo Jones blasting the anthem protests, saying, yeah, there's a balance between sports and social activism. George Foreman, I'll always be proud. He said last night on TV, I'll always be proud to be an American. You have one ESPN writer troubled by the American flag at the Olympics. Which flag would you prefer? China? Russia? You know, North Korea? Cuba? Venezuela? Tell me which flag you like better. Why don't we don't, a lot of these countries build walls and prevent people from leaving. We have more people in the world want to come here than leave here. Unbelievable. Fourth graders, by the way, required to complete equity surveys, but then told, don't discuss it with your parents. By the way, anytime they say don't discuss it with your parents, go home and discuss it with your parents. First thing I would do. Don't listen to these dopey agenda-driven people. All right, we got a lot to get to. We have updates. You're not going to believe. Now we have the government. I told you when they opened Pandora's box last week, saying that businesses and universities and schools can mandate mask wearing. Yeah, now we have a government agency doing it. That is now the next step, the mandate part. We'll get to that with Dr. George Fareed coming up later in the program.
We're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin yang, come along.
Are you sticking by your decision to hold any vote on that deal until after the Senate passes a much larger infrastructure package through reconciliation?
Yes.
It's time for mandates. Because it's the only way to protect our people.
We cannot now go back to where we were. And I am telling you, as I sit here, I have told you the facts on COVID from day one.
Freedom is back in style. Welcome to the revolution.
Yeah, we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song.
The new Sean Hannity Show. More behind-the-scenes information on breaking news and more bold, inspired solutions for America.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Thanks for being with us. Our number is 800-941. Sean, you want to be a part of the program. All right, before I get to our next guest, who happens to be one of my best friends, let me tell you about this guy. People don't really know a lot about his background, but I know everything about his background. And he was the former chief of staff for Ed Meese, probably one of the greatest attorneys general ever in the history of this country, in the Reagan administration. When this whole Iran-Contra issue came up, I just happened to know as a fact that this brilliant legal mind was working very hard to get to the truth. And that ended up being probably the best boomerang I've ever seen in my life, where they thought they had Colonel North. And, you know, at the end of the day, the American people responded that they loved this man, that this guy was a hero, and that what was being said was false, slanderous, all of the above. And it's just something that is rare. His passion, his love is this country. He has a patriotism coupled with a knowledge of our Constitution, second to none. I've watched him in the process of writing all of his number one best-selling books, and I've never quite seen anything like it, where literally entire rooms of a house are, you can barely navigate through them, I'll be honest. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like a puzzle. You got to figure your way out, a maze that you got to figure your way out of. And it's filled with research. He does his own research, which is very rare. All my books, I've gotten help with research and as much help as I can get, because we're all working so hard. But he wants to always do it on his own. And he takes his time, and he's put together what is now not only the number one best-selling book on the New York Times list, but it also, it is now outsold for the year the other top 15 books in the country combined. That's how great the new book by Mark Levin is, American Marxism. He's a dear friend, a great dad, wonderful patriot, a constitutional scholar, and he lays out a case in this book that if we don't pay attention to it, we will lose this great republic. He once said to me in an interview that we live in a post-constitutional America. I've quoted that often because we now see it's true. Just like I mentioned some examples today. You only care about a quid pro quo if it's Trump, not Joe and zero experience Hunter. You only care about Russia collusion, but you ignore Hillary's dirty Russian disinformation dossier or zero experience Hunter making millions for his company through a Russian oligarch while his dad's vice president. Or, of course, the money that he took out of the Bank of China with Chinese military connections with no experience that we see there either. And anyway, it might be the best book ever. He lays out the case of what is going on at this moment. But more importantly, there's only 7 chapters. Now, the 7th chapter is over 10,000 words. We choose liberty. And that is the answer. And I'm going to start on chapter 7 for a reason, because I know Mark's been doing other interviews, but this to me is the most important chapter. We all talk about what the problem is, but what is the solution? What is the answer? How do we stop the new Green Deal socialism? How do we get back to having equal justice and application of our laws in America and remain the great republic that was designed, as Ben Franklin said, if you can keep it? Great one, Mark Levin. I cannot believe 15 other books behind you combined and you sold more on week one of American Marxism. That is a great accomplishment, my friend.
First of all, I have to come here more often. I really appreciate your very, very kind words. And back at you, my brother, I will say this. It's the public that's responding. When you go on Amazon.com, Sean, if you go there now, there's 2,500, almost 3,000 comments, 5 stars. The book is resonating. This is very, very important, because when I sat down to write this, you know, we talked about it every weekend. This was a big undertaking. As you point out, I go through hundreds and hundreds of books. I decide what I'm going to focus on. 95% of what I read doesn't wind up in the book. And this was a much more complicated book for me to write, because I wanted to do 2 things. I wanted the public to know what's undergirding all these movements that are surrounding us, that are devouring our culture. Everywhere we look, from elementary schools to the border to our economic system, these things don't just happen. Why is it that the media are the mouthpieces for these movements? Why is it that the Democrat Party has been devoured by this movement, and on and on and on? And so I decided I needed to explore this because it's not good enough just to say, look what's happening, and then, you know, we go and have dinner and off it goes. This is not a passing fad. This is not a political cycle. This is the real deal. And I really feel that this is our moment as a generation. We better step up or our kids and grandkids are not going to have the kind of country you want them to have, not by far. And so I decided to dig into this. And I didn't even name the book until about 3 months before I handed it in. And I didn't want to call it Marxism because it's more than that. It's American Marxism. It is the Americanization, the customization, if you will, of these Marxist ideologies, not in every particular. I didn't call the book Marxism. I call it American Marxism. And critical race theory is just one of the latest examples. And I explain how that grew out of critical theory and where that comes from. And you can track it right back. These people are not exactly bashful about who they are. Some of them are still in the closet, but the scholars, the intellectuals, the activists, they're not. And same with climate change. There's a reason why it used to be called global cooling. Then they said, no, global warming. They said, no, climate change. And better yet, Green New Deal. This is nothing more than half a century worth of a narrative. A war on capitalism, a war on the Industrial Revolution. Marx hated the Industrial Revolution. Why? Because it demonstrated that the masses, the proletariat, weren't going to rise up and overthrow the country. They rose up and they became the massive middle class that defends this country. Marxism is a fraud and a fake. And so I went back and looked at that. And as I went through these different areas, and I quote them, and I unravel them, and I explain them, because I think it's very important to understand our enemies, but we can't defeat them. And then when I was almost done, I said to my wife, Julie, we need solutions. It's not good enough just to explain this stuff. We need solutions. So I spent the next 2 months writing the last chapter, as you point out, chapter 7. It's my longest book. It is my most important book, because it's really written for the moment. And the last chapter is filled with scores of suggestions on what we might do regarding each one of these corporations, which are really run by corporatists. These aren't free market capitalists. Our public schools, which are really run by the public sector unions and the educational bureaucrats, all of whom are radical left and in the back pocket of the Democrat Party. What are we going to do with the biggest problem of all, our colleges and universities? And I go through that. And it is useful that I have a background in the Constitution and the law, because many of the solutions I come up with are about organizing, about activism, one person, a group of people, having been part of the Tea Party movement and the Reagan Revolution. But it's also, how do we take it to these people? How do we take it to these organizations? They wake up every damn day trying to figure out how to destroy this society. We wake up every day trying to preserve this society. Okay, it's not enough. We need to take it to these people. We need to take it to the teachers' unions. We need to take it to the corporatists. We need to take it to these colleges and universities. We need to put the fear of God in them. And unlike the left, I'm not talking about Molotov cocktails. They use liberty to destroy liberty. We need to use liberty to defend liberty. And so there are scores of suggestions, and if you want a couple, I'll explain a few of them in the book.
Let me point out one thing, and people may think that this is, we do shows, and this is, this is something we think about all day and all night and all weekend. I mean, it's never, you never stop preparing a show if you have a radio and a TV show like we both do. There are three really transformational moments for modern day conservatism, as I describe it, a little differently than you. That would be the Reagan Revolution. That would be Newt Gingrich in 94. That would be Donald Trump in 2016. And if you wanted to add a fourth, it might be the Tea Party in 2010. And I think the moment that we're headed towards is most similar to 2010, because we see the impact and the effect of these draconian leftist, authoritarian, statist, Marxist, socialist policies that they're now pushing. My question to you is, we choose liberty. I tell people, first, get the election laws in your state straight. Second, we will prosecute the case and it'll unfold on its own, the failure of socialism. And three, lay out the agenda that will inspire the American people to truly make this country, turn it into that shining city on a hill?
What I'm trying to do in this book is reach to everybody who loves this country. We don't always have to agree, whether you're a moderate Democrat or Libertarian or Republican. I don't really care. We need to galvanize. We need to rally. We need to join together to defend this great country, because this isn't about liberalism or democratic socialism, or certainly not progressivism. This is much more diabolical than that. The heads of the Black Lives Matter, they announced that they're Marxists. The people who are pushing the radical economic agenda, as you'll see in the book, they've announced that they're Marxists. The professors who promote this, many of them talk about how they teach Marxism in the classroom. You hear this word reimagined. You hear that word all the time, don't you, Sean? That comes from a Marxist professor. She's passed away, by the name of Anyan. That's what she said. We need to reimagine the economy. You know, we need to reimagine policing. We don't want to reimagine anything. If you have a suggestion, go ahead and put it forward. You have a concrete proposal, let's hear it. We're not reimagining this country. Reimagine it to what? And so when you look at this, they never promote liberty. They never promote individualism because they don't believe it. I'll give you an example. In our schools today, there's a whole movement called the social movement theory. And I have this in chapter two, but it just gives you a flavor of this. And it's widely taught. They talk about collective identity, collective beliefs, collective consciousness. In other words, it's all about eliminating individualism and dehumanizing people, diminish the individual. This is Marx. They always talk about black versus white or brown versus red. They always talk about rich versus poor, the oppressed versus the oppressor, the victim versus the victimizer. Again, Marx requires class warfare. But in America, we are founded because individuals are supposed to be the focus. If you want to make something of yourself, make something of yourself. If you want to be successful, then be successful. And here's the funny thing, by the way, about critical race theory that needs to be said. When you read the founders of the critical race theory movement, they dump all over Martin Luther King. They dump all over the civil rights movement. Now, hear me out. This is important. They do not believe in a colorblind society. They do not believe in the progress that was made all through the 60s and since then. They argue that this is nothing more than an effort by the white race to appease everything else that's gone on, and that it intrudes and overthrowing this white dominant society. That's Marx without the racism. In other words, it's Marx who says socialism, he despised socialists because socialism is a halfway measure that prevents us from continuing with the revolution. So he hated the socialists more than anybody else. And so I say the same thing to you folks. The people who are promoting these movements, they may not be successful, but they're going to do an enormous amount of damage. When you're teaching an 8-year-old, depending on what their race is, what they can expect out of their lives, you are diminishing each one of those human beings. You are making it more difficult for each one of those human beings to succeed, whether you're black or whether you're white, whatever you are. Rather than teaching opportunity and freedom and, yes, equality and justice and all these things, you're not teaching that. This isn't about teaching slavery. We don't teach about slavery. We don't teach about American history, the good, the bad, and the... Absolutely. That's not this. Critical race theory is teaching racism. And the way I explain it is it's Louis Farrakhan dressed up as scholarship, except it's the undergirding principle is Marxism. That's the bottom line. There's a reason why many people will debate me. Not one of them will come on my show and debate me. No, not Delgado. Unless
it's like debate suicide. They're going to get their ass handed to them, on a silver platter. You know, it's interesting, Mark, because we talk offline, we talk online, and, you know, the thing is you basically touched less than 1% of what you put in this book. And that's why I'm urging people. We have it up on Hannity.com right now, on my Twitter handle, at Sean Hannity. We pinned the tweet. And we also, you can get it at Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. This is an important book for every American patriot to understand how we are going to get our country back on track. Great one. We love having you. American Marxism.
God bless.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue.
just making sure you can get 3 hours a day wherever you are. This is the Sean Hannity Show now on 650 stations. Sean Hannity.
All right, so there's now a stampede going. Why? Because people are realizing, wow, I'm going to save a fortune and get the exact same service and coverage using the exact same cell towers as the big carriers like AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon. I mean, I mean a stampede. Thousands and thousands have gotten the word. Pure Talk offers the same service on average, family saving over $800 a year. Get the exact same things. Keep your phone number. It's simple. It's easy. And all you have to do is dial pound 250 on your cell. Say the keyword, save now, and you're going to save 50% off your first month. Pound 250, keyword save now. Remember, they have more plans than the big carriers. Unlimited talk, text, 6 gigs of data, just $30 a month. That's it. I mean, this is real money in your pocket. And you know what? Money's freedom. Anyway, so just go to take out your cell phone, dial pound 250, say the keyword, save now from Pure Talk. When we come back, all right, remember I told you last week when Biden gave the nod to universities and businesses and vaccine mandates, yeah, that it was coming to everybody? It's coming to everybody. I'll explain next with Dr. Fareed, and we'll get your calls in next half hour, 800-941-SEAN.
Liberals nuts. Sean Hannity is back on the radio right now.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, our number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, as promised, let's get to our busy phones here. Let's say hi to Carol in the great state of Indiana, Heartland, USA. What's up, Carol? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. You know, I just think that Pelosi must recuse herself from any investigation into the January 6th Capitol Hill fiasco. You know, she failed to secure our Capitol on January 6th. She put the police there, the Congress, in harm's way. She didn't prepare any of them for what was going to happen and the possibility of a breach. So I've not heard one congressman ask for Pelosi's recusal from this breach. She's not only is she not recusing, but she's able to pick who will investigate her incompetence and her culpability on January 6th.
Listen, remember, and I mentioned this earlier, Stephen Sund is the former Capitol Police chief. He said he requested the National Guard and was ignored 6 separate times. This is even one video I saw of one of the protesters saying, bring in reinforcements. So somebody, Sweet Baby James, showed me, I don't even know what TikTok is, to be honest, barely, but he showed me on a TikTok. But the guy's saying, why aren't you guys calling in reinforcements and stopping this? So it really is in the purview. Remember, and the White House had called over. Mark Meadows is on record telling everybody that the president said, with all the people in town, that you need to have the guard on standby. And this is not really a commission. Because if it was a commission, if we cared about rioting, if we cared about violence, if we cared about what happened over the summer, if we cared what happened on January 6th, to me, any of this is wrong, and it can't happen. We cannot have our institutions, we can't have people stampeding through the Capitol without checks and balances and safety and security. I'm a law and order guy. But nor can we have the same thing in our cities where thousands of people are hit with rocks and bricks and Molotov cocktails. Those are the things that the Democrats ignored. And the fact that they wouldn't let Jim Jordan or Congressman Banks on the committee, and they go with Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney's already made up her mind. Adam Kinzinger already made up his mind. You know, they are two anti-Trump, you know, advocates. This is all about, they cannot get over their addiction on Trump. If they cared about violence, then they should show equal concern and should have just as many hearings about what happened last summer in every riot that took place in this country. We were consistent. I condemn them both. I condemn them today both. And, but, you know, the fact that nobody's going to be held responsible for injuring all of these cops and burning down police precincts and all the looting and arson that went on in these cities, and we're going to ignore it, and then we're going to get lectured on law and order. 25-plus people died last summer. In the case in the Capitol, you know, one death is too many. And there was one death, one person shot. And it just is, but this is not a commission that is about getting to answers. That I can tell you. Democrats are not capable of it. They're just, they're too obsessed in their hatred.
The thing is, Sean, is just regular old folks. I'm about 20 minutes south of Chicago. We're watching this, and people really want to have some ideas from the ground level about what can they do to participate in stopping this, because this is not acceptable, but complaining about it is not really doing anything.
It's you had 71 people shot 20 minutes from your home last weekend. 71. Yeah. Now, I mentioned the names of the people. Nobody else does. Look, the bottom line is if Democrats can politicize it, they'll highlight it. If they can't politicize it, they won't highlight it. They wouldn't even acknowledge riots were riots last summer. If they cared about lives mattering, then they would have dealt with the murdering and the shooting that goes on predictably every weekend in your city. You know, they would have done it back in the Biden-Obama years. They didn't. Only if they can exploit it politically. And I'm just not falling for their it's a crock. It's a sham. It's selective moral outrage. It is quintessential Democratic politics in play, and it's sad.
Well, I hope that the folks out there would call their congressmen about Pelosi's recusal. And she has no right to put anybody on a committee that's going to investigate her. And I guess that's
Really let's take off really the guys that would investigate why the guard didn't show up. And let's put in all the anti-Trump people we can. It's a predetermined outcome. It's a sham. Yes. And, you know, the Pelosi Republicans is, I thought that was the right term. Anyway, thank you. Appreciate the call, Carol. Rich is in Colorado. Rich, glad you called. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Quick question for you on that, because I tried watching this so-called commission today, and boy, what a headache. But a quick question for you on that, because if they're looking for accountability and transparency on this stuff and literally hunting down people to arrest them, is there any percentage that we could ever find out of people that may have been paid by someone like George Soros to be there? Any agitators, anything? And where are they? Are they in jail?
I've not seen any evidence of that. We do know that there were... I know that there was one particular identified member. I don't remember the group. It was either BLM or Antifa or something, but was well known in that group. Now, listen, my take is some of this was pre-planned. We know it was pre-planned because they had staged places around the Capitol where they were picking up things that they were going to use for this moment. And that would, to me, if we want to get to the bottom of the investigation, that's where I would start. When you have hundreds of thousands of people that you know are marching to the Capitol at that moment, my question is, why didn't you have the National Guard on standby? Because the White House had even suggested it. Mark Meadows had suggested it. The president had suggested it. And that falls on Pelosi. But I doubt this commission is even going to raise that question. That's how corrupt it is.
Is there any way of finding that out? If something like that did happen then with other planned agitators to be there?
Well, I think there were planned agitators with varying. I think mostly I don't know who they are. We never got to the bottom of it, but certainly there was planning. That much we know based on where they had placed certain items. And remember what happened the night before. Remember we got the videotapes of people picking up things that they were going to use the next day that they had stashed away. So there was planning among some. And then I think some people that went to the rally got caught up in it. It was dumb. You're violating the law. Not a good thing to do. The overwhelming numbers of people that were there that day didn't go near going into the Capitol, and they were smart. And I know people that were there that saw what was happening, and they turned around and walked away. They were not going to be a part of it, rightly so. Anyway, Rich, thanks. You appreciate the call. 800-941-SEAN, our number. Rick is in Kentucky. Rick, glad you called. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for taking my call. I have lived through 15 presidential elections. In 14 of them, we knew who was going to be president on Tuesday night of election night. We woke up on this election on Wednesday with a totally different outcome. So my question is,
well, in 2000, we did it. In 2000, it took a long time. Swinging, perforated, hanging.
Right.
You know, yeah, dimpled, pimpled chads. That madness went on, too.
But my question is, obviously, they're going after the swing states with this voting election. They want it so open that they can vote, like you said, for a long time and be wide open. And we know why Delaware is closed, because it's not important in the election as far as a swing state. Do you think they are going after the swing states to get these election laws open so that they can steal another election 4 years from now?
Why would the Department of Justice of Joe Biden ever, you know, go after the state of Georgia, which has 17 days of in-person early voting and Delaware has none? Why wouldn't they go after Delaware? Why would you go after Georgia that has drop boxes in every precinct and Delaware has none? Why would you go after Georgia that you don't need to provide an excuse for a mail-in ballot or an absentee ballot? In Delaware, you must provide an excuse. Both states require voter ID laws. So that means now that Joe Biden has weaponized the Department of Justice and he's using that for political purposes, as if he hasn't done enough damage to the state of Georgia, because they lost the MLB All-Star game, and that's hundreds of million, $100 million plus. A lot of minority businesses also hurt in Georgia, because his state, far more restrictive, why didn't he ever one time in the 5,000 years that he represented the state of Delaware ever lift a finger to change the voting laws in his home state and make them less restrictive and create more accessibility? That shows you how political it is. And by the way, why would anyone be against voter ID? Why would anyone be against signature verification, updated voter rolls? Why would anyone be against partisan observers from all sides watching the vote count up close from start to finish? Why would anybody be against chain of custody controls so that nobody can tamper with ballots? Why wouldn't anybody be against ballot harvesting? These are simple, fundamental integrity measures. Democrats don't want them. Why? The only reason I can think of, if you have a better one, tell me, is they have nefarious intentions. And I think most people see this now for what it is.
100% agree. God bless you and God bless America, Sean.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Rick in Kentucky, thank you. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. More of your calls. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. Back to our busy phones. Let us say hi to Sharon, who's in the great state of Texas. We should be in Texas, but we're dopey and dumb and stupid, and we're guilty of living in the high-tax state of New York, but that's not going to last long. Anyway, Sharon, glad you called.
Thank you, Sean. Yes, I'm very blessed and thankful to be here in the state of Texas, yes. But we have a lot of results going on, very bad results from this big open border. But I'm calling about the vaccines. And you covered it a lot. You've been covering it. I've heard it day after day on the news. And the thought keeps coming to my mind, why are we getting this big push from the government to take these vaccines to push us into some collective group instead of just letting us make our individual choices, as you have been saying day after day? Let everybody make their own choice. Why is the government so enraptured with this pushing vaccines on us, and especially since the border is wide open and the people coming across the border are carrying not only COVID but other forms of diseases that we don't know what to do with, and they're flooding them into our cities. And so I think it's just very duplicitous for the government to say that they care about keeping the countdown on the COVID infections when they're letting people from foreign aliens wander into our country, and they're just busing them all over the country, dumping them into our cities, rather probably
they're cities, testing probably. Very few of them in the middle of a pandemic. They're also, which is incomprehensible to me, they're also putting kids and others in Joe's cages that are literally the people living on top of each other. We now know that they're in the cases where they do offer free vaccination as they process you and they don't abide by the laws and send you back to the country where you came from. They're offering free vaccinations, and about a third of illegal immigrants are saying, no, we don't want to get vaccinated. And then they, as you rightly point out, then they send them to other states. Well, what is the likely outcome of that? There's a high rate of COVID positivity among the people that are illegally crossing. So that means now we're going to spread it all throughout the entire country. And with the Delta variant and the Lambda variant and whatever new variant shows up down the road, it's not a good idea. You know, I said we need three simple things for legal immigration. Point one, you absolutely should have a background check so we know you don't have associations that are dangerous. Number two, after a pandemic, in the middle of a pandemic, I think a health check is a reasonable request. Make sure you're not bringing COVID into the United States. And number three, you know, we only have so many spots available. You ought to be able to prove that you're able to take care of yourself and you won't be a financial burden on the American people. It's not that hard. All right. Thanks for a good call. Appreciate it. Sharon, Texas, 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program, quick break, right back. All right, news roundup, information overload hour, Sean Hannity Show. We're saving the last half hour of today's program just for your calls. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. One interesting statistic I saw earlier today, Iceland, which nearly the entire adult population there has been fully vaccinated, and they there are now setting daily records for new infections, mostly among vaccinated. Now, this is becoming something that we're paying attention to. Now, is the level high? No. Is the vaccine seemingly offering some protection for some? Yes. Is the death rate lower? It is, according to the data from the CDC, which we examined and went over in great detail yesterday. But anyway, if you look at the CDC, what they call them are breakthrough infections. They're rare, but there's been a lot of them. But not according to those. If we have about 155 million adults in America that have been fully vaccinated, they have identified about 153,000 symptomatic breakthrough cases in the U.S., according to a new CDC document. ABC News reported that news first. And what I told you last week, too, is once the Biden administration gave the wink and the nod that it's okay for businesses and universities and schools to mandate that people be vaccinated, I said that the floodgates are now open. That was their way of letting others take the heat before them, and they'll come in behind them, and now they're going to try and mandate vaccinations, or you can get fired, lose your job. They keep saying follow the science. Well, the science out of the highly respected Cleveland Clinic says that if you had COVID, even if your antibody levels go lower, you still have T-cell antibodies, which means that if in fact you had come into contact with COVID a second time, that it would immediately activate the T-cells, the memory within those cells, to start fighting the virus again. And that's what they're saying. Again, I'm following the science, right? Follow the science. Now, the first federal agency is mandating that the Biden administration's Department of Veterans Affairs is now requiring its healthcare employees to get the COVID vaccine. Well, I mean, what about the nurses and doctors? What about the people that already had it and have natural immunity that maybe for whatever reason, in consultation with their doctor or the research, they don't really want to get it? It doesn't seem like that matters very much to people. One California city saying vaccinated employees need to wear stickers if they want to work without a mask. We seem to see now CBS Sacramento is reporting. Their headline is higher COVID rate found in some counties with higher vaccination rates. Why and what it says about the Delta variant. So this is now becoming a pretty mainstream condition and situation that we're seeing. We expect any day now that the CDC will recommend everyone K through 12 that is in school wear a mask regardless of vaccination status, according to new guidance. It's the opposite of what they told the American people. But as I pointed out in great detail yesterday on both radio and TV, you know, they keep flipping and flopping and flailing, you know, all over the place. And they keep changing their own standards almost daily. And yet they're telling non-medical people like myself that I must tell people what to do when I know nothing about your individual medical history and I know nothing about your current medical condition. I'm not a doctor. I mean, the intensity with which the left in this country and the mob and the media just wants me to play doctor on radio. Well, what if I tell somebody? Everybody, broad sweeping statement. Never mind that there are unique health conditions that would warrant that a good doctor would recommend not getting the vaccine, of which we've interviewed doctors that say those conditions do exist. Anyway, so that's where we are now. It's interesting. Andrew Cuomo's claiming now he always told the truth. Okay, that's pretty interesting. And he's saying about unvaccinated people, you know where they live. Go knock on every door. What, we're going to have the COVID police knocking on doors? What, we're going to tie people down and jab them whether they want it or not? What does that mean? Comrade de Blasio's out there saying it's time for mandates because it's the only way to protect our people. Okay, I guess they've made up their minds, too. And then you have the flipping and flopping Anthony Fauci revising mask recommendations. This is the guy in March of 2020. Masks aren't going to work. You know, maybe it'll stop one little droplet. Mask doesn't work. Then it was one mask. Then it was two masks. Then it was, if you're vaccinated, you don't need a mask. Now you're vaccinated, you do need a mask. And maybe you're going to need a mask every year in perpetuity, you know, until you hit the grave. Anyway, we'll get our medical aid team here in a second. Let me play you Cuomo and flip-flop Fauci.
I think they should also be targeting these same communities in their area. And they should have an effort like what we're doing statewide. Get into those communities. You know the zip code. You know where they live. Go knock on every door with representatives of the community. Why don't you want to take a vaccine? What are you worried about? Speak their language and talk them through it and get them a vaccine.
Do you think masks should be brought back for vaccinated Americans?
You know, Jake, this is under active consideration. If you're asking, am I part of the discussion? Yes, I am part of the discussion. But I think what you are seeing, even though as of our conversation at this moment, the CDC still says and recommends that if you are vaccinated fully, that you do not need to wear a mask indoors. However, if you look at what's going on locally in the trenches in places like LA County, the local officials have the discretion, and the CDC agrees with that ability and discretion capability to say, you know, you're in a situation where we're having a lot of dynamics of infection. So even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask. That's a local decision that's not incompatible with the CDC's overall recommendations that give a lot of discretion to the locals.
Okay. You want to make heads or tail out of that? Because I absolutely cannot. Anyway, joining us now is our friend Dr. George Fareed. And I got to, on a personal level, say that I've now made numerous calls to Dr. Fareed, and because he's been on the front line with Dr. Tyson and some others, and they have had incredible success in practicing proactive medicine. And now a lot of studies bear out that they were ahead of the curve. Studies that show, yeah, hydroxychloroquine taken early 84% of the time does mitigate some of the symptoms. the success that is known as ivermectin, the monoclonal cocktail known as Regeneron and Eli Lilly's version of it. I've called on him. For example, this weekend, I said, Dr. Fareed, I have a very dear friend. He lives in another state, and he was just diagnosed with COVID. And within 24 hours, he had the Regeneron infusion into his body and all of the therapeutics that have proven successful in his practice. And he's doing fine, by the way, Dr. Fareed, thanks to your help. And, you know, he does all of this free of charge, as a personal favor from me. But more importantly, I think he really does it because he cares so much about people and he doesn't want to wait. You know, in New York, the average person, you get COVID, you test positive. Yeah, go home and check your oxygen and check your temperature. If you get a temperature, take Tylenol. If your oxygen levels go to 90 or below, go into an emergency room. That's probably day 10, and your lungs are shot by that time by not being proactive. Dr. Fareed, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much, Sean, and thanks for that compliment. You're a great man, and you've been doing what should be done widely.
I'm being a great man. I'm abusing our friendship, and I'm calling you night and day. No.
I'm happy to be of help at any time in that capacity, because I know what we have done for the last year and a half is so successful. So there, you brought up a number of issues that are extremely important. By the way, I spoke with our mutual friend, your friend, and he's sounded great today, and so he's definitely out of the woods in this infection. 99.5% of the patients like him that we treat are like him in 24 to 48 hours, which is our goal to avoid hospitalization. And so what you brought up is a number of things concerning the vaccines that are being mandated now. And I got immunized at the beginning because I'm on the front line. I assumed they would be safe. Now I don't recommend these vaccines because of their side effects, adverse reactions. I've had two people that are brought to my attention from patients that died within 1 to 2 days of the vaccine. And 11,000 fatalities in our country are too many on any immunization program. But let's just address what is going on. And that is that what you brought out with Iceland, with Israel, with UK, the vaccines are not completely effective. Their breakthrough infections are occurring quite extensively. And I just had two or three yesterday that I've got under treatment in very high-risk people. They do very well with our treatment, which actually is still not properly recognized. And the variants that these vaccines are creating in people, where the virus is evolving to avoid this immunity, the antibodies from the vaccines, creates this Delta variant, Epsilon variant, other variants that aren't as virulent, not as fatal, but very infectious. So whatever created the original virus, maybe by the lab generated modification of the spike protein so it could infect more effectively human cells. In any case, the virus is able to, that's evolved, the Delta variant is more infectious, but very receptive to treatment. And that's what people need to know, that they needn't necessarily get this, accept the mandates. And that's what I feel I'm running into a brick wall against, unfortunately, because the early treatment is the solution, and it was from the get-go, and it still is. And there was a Wall Street Journal article yesterday that described the problems of why we don't have early treatments, and there was absolutely no mention of what we did and do, no mention of hydroxychloroquine, only a mention of remdesivir, and which isn't very effective and very costly to use it as an intravenous injection, and a little reference to ivermectin. But there's still a push by some elements to get this message out there that you perhaps don't have early treatment yet, which we do. So in any case, I just wanted to touch on those two points that I appreciated your mentioning the Iceland situation, and it is reflected in other populations where mass vaccination has been carried out and it's led to evolution of variants, and the variants themselves shouldn't be feared because they're not as dangerous, as you pointed out also. But they do create problems for people. They make them very uncomfortable, and some of them will deteriorate and require all of what we had to do last year for patients in the hospitals and accepting fatalities. I was just on call last weekend at our hospital, and we had two or three COVID patients. None of them got early treatment. They all came to the hospital because they didn't get the treatment that suppressed the viral multiplication so effectively and so safely.
Well, I mean, it's amazing information, doctor. Quick break. More with Dr. Fareed on the other side, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. All right, we continue now with Dr. George Fareed, who has been a big advocate of early therapeutics rather than reactive medicine after the fact. And unfortunately, too many people ignore him, but he's been right on target the whole time and on the front lines with COVID since day one. I don't know why there has been this mysterious reluctance and resistance to be more proactive. Why are these states even at this point, are they resistant to Regeneron, resistant to some of these proven therapeutics? I'll give you the last word. We only have about 30 seconds, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. And your point about those who recover, they shouldn't be required to get the vaccine, that there are bad reactions to the vaccine in many of those that recovered from the natural infection, and they have long-term, probably lifelong immunity. So that was such an important point. And I have nurses now calling me because they had COVID-19 on the front line, and now they're being forced to get a vaccine. And they don't have an alternative, actually. They lose their job. That is terrible. So I have to tell them to take aspirin and antihistamines around the time you get the vaccine if you have to get it. But they shouldn't be required because they're far better immunized or immune than the vaccine would be able to generate.
Well, I appreciate all that you do, all the help you've given some people that are important to me in my life, and in the case of this gentleman this weekend, he's, 74 years old, and you, within 24 hours of diagnosis, he was able to have all therapeutics already started, and that's proactive medicine. I personally prefer that, and I urge people to learn more about these things as they do their own research and consult with their own doctors. But we appreciate you being with us, Dr. Fareed.
Thank you very much. Anytime, Sean. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. I mean that sincerely. Quick break, right back. Your calls on the other side, straight ahead. 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. We're going to take calls for the rest of the half hour. I want to play one little thing as a follow-up to Dr. Fareed, who we just had on. Remember, the mantra is follow the science. Okay, well, once we got a hold of Fauci, flip-flop Fauci's emails, what did we learn? He was told on January 31st, the very day that Trump instituted the xenophobic, hysterical, and racist travel ban with China, and only 10 days after the first identified case of coronavirus in the U.S., on that day, Dr. Fauci was told that it looked like one of the genomes and the sequencing of this virus was manipulated in a lab. And then a series, a flurry of emails back and forth, which we've now had an opportunity to examine, show a very nervous Dr. Flip-Flop Fauci, because Dr. Fauci knew that NIH monies, your money, went to fund the virology lab in Wuhan, China. And it's just, I couldn't believe it. And then they're trying to say, no, we knew that they were studying coronaviruses in that Wuhan lab. We knew that they were involved in gain-of-function research. And Dr. Fauci flippantly even said in 2012 that he supports gain-of-function research, even if it means that a pandemic would break out as a result. That's how nuts he is. Anyway, here's Rand Paul calling all of this out.
Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain of function research in the Wuhan Institute of
Virology. Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
We do not fund.
Do you fund Dr. Barrick's gain of function research?
Dr. Barrick does not doing gain of function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina, not in China.
You don't think inserting a bat virus spike protein that he got from the Wuhan Institute into the SARS virus is gain of function?
That is not.
You would be in the minority because at least 200 scientists have signed a statement from the Cambridge Working Group saying that it is gain of function.
Well, it is not.
Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain of function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans.
Right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Let's read from the NIH definition of gain of function. This is your definition that you guys wrote. It says that scientific research that increases the transmissibility among mammals is gain of function. They took animal viruses that only occur in animals and they increased their transmissibility to humans. How you can say that is not gain of function?
It is not.
It's a dance and you're dancing around this because you're trying to obscure responsibility for 4 million people dying around the world from a pandemic.
And let's send Dr. Fauci.
Now you're getting into something. If the point that you are making is that the grant that was funded as a subaward from EcoHealth to Wuhan created SARS-CoV-2. That's where you are getting. Let me finish.
We don't know.
Well,
we don't
wait
know
a minute.
If it did come from the lab, but all the evidence is pointing that it came from the lab, and there will be responsibility for those who funded the lab, including yourself.
I totally resent the lie that you are now propagating, Senator, because if you look at the viruses that were used in the experiments that were given in the annual reports that were published in the literature, it is molecularly impossible.
No one's saying those viruses caused the pandemic. What we're alleging is that gain of function research was going on in that lab and NIH funded it.
That is
you can't
not
get away from it. It meets your definition and you are obfuscating the truth.
Let me just finish. I want everyone to understand that if you look at those viruses, and that's judged by qualified virologists and evolutionary biologists, those viruses are molecularly impossible to result
in SARS-CoV-2. Caused the pandemic. We're saying they are gain-of-function viruses because they're animal viruses that became more transmissible in human, and you funded it.
And you
admit the truth.
And you are implying that what we did was responsible for the deaths of individual. I totally resent
that.
And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
I mean, it's just unbelievable to me. It really is. How did this happen? All right, let's get to our phones. Many of you very patient here. Kim is in the great state of New Mexico. Kim, hi, how are you? It's been a while since I've been there. Glad you called.
Wow, Sean Hannity, it's great to talk to you. Been a fan since Hannity and Colm days.
Oh, thank you.
My point that I just wanted to get to first before I make it is that the politicization of the vaccines, of the coronavirus itself, has just distressed me to my soul. It is just overwhelming in every aspect. You don't know who to believe anymore. Even when you do your research, you don't know what to believe. But the point that I was wanting to make, and it's kind of making me scratch my head, is the mandates. So nothing in life is absolute. There should be areas where people like the nurses in Texas should not need to get a vaccine. But mandates for vaccinations aren't new. My son is a fourth-year student in university. He was not allowed to live in the dorms unless he had proof of vaccination for meningitis. My husband's retired military. I can't tell you how many vaccinations he had to take. And on top of that, they made him take his wisdom teeth out, even though they weren't a problem. I just don't see why a mandate for college students or people working is a big deal when it's been going on for years. You and I both, because you're my age, you and I both had to take the polio vaccine when we were kids.
Sure. I had no say at that point in my life, trust me.
I know, and I'm not saying that I'm not advocating for grade school children. It's not been tested properly for them. I totally agree with that. They don't need to be wearing masks either. But I kind of scratch my head when everybody is up in arms about college students or people going to work, with exception, without having the vaccine.
Remember, it's still under emergency use authorization.
Yes.
So we got to remember that part of it, too. Now, am I very grateful to medical science and medical researchers and medical professionals for the hard work and the dedication that they showed in creating the therapeutics, the Regenerons, et cetera, et cetera? Yes, I'm very grateful. Am I grateful that they came up with vaccines that even if you are a breakthrough case, when you look at the number of people that have gotten the jab, 155 million, and about 156,000, we call them breakthrough infections, it's still relatively low. On top of that, if in fact you got the vaccine, what things are showing is that your odds of dying from this are very, very, very rare and low. Now, do we know everything about every side effect and every aspect of this? We do not. And that this is the problem. They're just not being honest with us. They just keep changing the rules every day. No mask, one mask, two masks, no masks indoors, no mask outdoors, masks indoors again, no mask. You know, they keep changing. You know, they themselves, you know, they were wrong on all of their models, all of their expectations, all of their predictions, all of their advice. It was all wrong. And so if there's vaccine hesitancy, I'll use their great words that they're trying to blame conservatives for, I am very pro-science. And like you mentioned, I had all the vaccines that you had when you were young. I didn't have any problems with it. I'm pro-science with vaccinations. But with all that said, for me, it's got to be something that individuals decide. Now, either we are going to be told that if you get the jab, you get the shot, you take the vaccine, they go door to door, they bang on the doors. If you're told that if you get it, life goes back to normal, and now they're saying, never mind, it doesn't go back to normal, put your mask back on. Now I want to know why. I want to know why they've gone backwards, why they're contradicting what they told us.
Absolutely.
And we have a right to get that answer.
Right. And that was the point that I was making in the beginning, was that I don't know who to believe anymore. It's very much up in the air as to what is true and what isn't. And the politicization is off the charts. But at the same time, I just kind of have to scratch my head about why it's such a problem.
Well, I mean,
if you're following the science.
This is about your life. This is your family. These are your children. They're not the government's children. You get to decide ultimately. Now, again, we were told once you got vaccinated, if you made that decision, you don't have to worry about what other people are doing. Now, you know, I'm reading these articles about, you know, there's great animosity and anger breaking out among those that decided to get the vaccine. They're angry at people that have been hesitant to get the vaccine. And I'm like, well, why are you angry? Because people don't agree with you? You're allowed to disagree in the United States of America. This was in the New York Times. As virus cases rise, another contagion spreads among the vaccinated, and that's anger. And many inoculated Americans are losing patience with vaccine holdouts. I mean, whatever happened to medical privacy? Am I the only one on radio and TV that actually thinks medical privacy is important? or doctor-patient confidentiality is important. Am I the only one that believes in freedom? Take it seriously. You know, I've watched people get to death's door with this virus. We lost over 600,000 Americans. You need to take it seriously. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows about masks, social distancing. Not everybody knows about therapeutics, which are available, because there's like a media blackout on that part. And the next thing is you've got to research your ass off and make sure that you are informed yourself. Take that responsibility on your own and then talk to your doctor, your doctors, medical professionals you trust based on your medical history, which is unique to you, and your current medical condition, which is unique to you. You and your doctors will make that decision. Actually, ultimately, it's you that's going to make that decision. And as a parent, I would argue that you have the right to make the decision for your child as well. And as a result of these mandates in school, I can tell you homeschooling is going through the roof. People have decided you're not going to tell me what to do, especially because the confusion and the people that have been the most wrong are the people like Fauci. Joe Biden, fully vaccinated, socially distant with his wife, fully vaccinated, socially distant, outdoors wearing a mask. And then he goes indoors and visits former President Carter, former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. They take their masks off inside in front of the old people, basically get on top of the old people so they can get intimate pictures with the former president and the former First Lady. Now, that would be mixed messaging, and that's confusion that they are causing. You know, for telling us life's going to go back to normal and then saying, never mind. They're creating that hesitancy, that doubt among people. You know, can you give us a straight answer? Can you tell us? And if you think you were right, but it turns out you're wrong, why don't you own that too and say, you know what? We thought this, but now we think differently. That would be the decent, responsible thing to do. But, you know, this is government. Don't hold your breath. Anyway, I appreciate a good call, Kim. Thank you for being with us. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. And that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. Jim Jordan not allowed on the 1-6 Commission. Why? He'll join us. Also, Congresswoman Stefanik. We got Geraldo back with Dan Mangino. We'll have the latest on mandating vaccines with Dr. Sapphire and Dr. McCarty, the great one, Mark Levin, Leo 2.0, Terrell, Larry Elder, 9 Eastern, Hannity on Fox. We'll see you then. As always, thank you for being with us. We'll see you tonight, back here tomorrow. You make this show possible. We will never forget it.